You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I am your co-host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on all social media at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, please, please, please follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. We are also on Instagram. We're on Facebook. Where else are we at? Yeah, those places.
The streets. Yeah.
The streets. We're always in the streets.
In the building, in the streets. Patreon.
Yep. Patreon is always in the streets and in the building. Shout out to them. And clockradiospeakers.com, powered by Tumblr, all previous 300 some odd episodes. One of these days, I'm going to get through this whole spiel in one sitting. Yeah, Doc's here. What's up, man?
What's up, man? Everything's good. Y'all can follow me on Twitter if you want, at Doc underscore Beats, S9Z, or like Armand said, just follow the show. It's pretty much at CRS Podcast everywhere. And we mentioned the Patreon before. If you go to patreon.com/CRS Podcast or just go to clockradiospeakers.com, there should be a Patreon link towards the top. We've got two tiers, $5 and $10. Everybody gets access to what we record before we start the show, the pre-show. It's, you know, some gibbering, some jabbing. Like, for example, today, you got to hear us riff on Vince McMahon coming out to Bloody Money Part 3. So, you know, if that sort of ridiculousness intrigues you, head on over to patreon.com/CRS Podcast. And we put out something for our $10 subscribers as well this week. I put together the audio from the Sunday service at the Forum that was streamed live that Kanye did for Jesus is King. Cleaned up the audio, EQ'd it, split out into tracks, gave it cover art, all that stuff, put it up for our $10 subscribers as a thank you. So if that sort of thing interests you, head over there as well. Oh yeah, man, everything's good.
I think want to appreciate, take time to appreciate our Patreon supporters for sticking with us as we're trying to, like, you know, figure out what content will look like and how to distribute things amongst the tiers and stuff. You guys have definitely stayed consistent with your support. And I know Doc does, but we definitely appreciate it. So, like, thank you for that. It's going to be more pronounced, a lot more stuff. Doc and I have some ideas, some wonderful ideas, and we're gonna get to executing pretty soon. So, thank you. What's up, man?
I don't think anything happened this week. We got a lot to talk about, man.
No, I thought we were doing the definitive 15 on Nappy Roots.
Definitive one.
They had two records.
But it was the classic, like, they had two records where, like, they really had one, and then they had one, another one that was, that was cool.
Nah, they had two. They had two. They had All Gnaw.
Yeah.
And they had, what is that song called? All My Life I've Been Poor.
Right, but the fact that you had to go, what's that second song called? That's the point.
But I feel like that was the more notable song. That's the song that the white people liked.
No, they liked All Gnaw.
Did they?
Oh yeah.
Like maybe like in Kansas or something.
What are you trying to say?
No, I'm just saying, like, I feel like they would relate to a more country style of hip hop.
I mean, by that regards, like Bubba Sparks, man, he would have been the original Red State rapper, right?
He was too hip hop.
Too hip hop?
Yeah, he was too hip hop for the streets, and he was too street for hip hop. That conundrum. But no, we are talking about, is it safe to say this is the most polarizing release of the year?
Most
musically?
Most anticipated.
You think so?
I mean, what else has been as highly anticipated as this? By like everybody.
I still don't have 10 albums in my end of year list.
End of the year list is going to be rough. But, you know, we've still got 2 months.
2 months? I feel like Rihanna's coming I feel like she's coming like right around the holidays. But I think everybody else, Kendrick, Drake, I think all those people are loading up for first quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we're talking about definitely one of the most highly anticipated albums of the year. We're talking about Jesus is King. There's a lot more to it than just the album, though, because in typical Kanye fashion, he has flooded the arena, or whatever you want to call it. Like, he has flooded the zone is the term I wanted to use. He like there's just an overwhelming amount of interviews and content and Sunday service stuff and the movie, and there's just a lot to talk about. And in true Clock Radio Speakers fashion, we're gonna dive deep, like track by track, of course track by track, but just we're going all over the place with this. But before we get to that,
yeah,
we've got some other stuff to talk about.
Well, I also want to note that for our Patreon subscribers, we are also going to dive into Yandhi.
Yeah, so I should let me clarify what that means. There's really no like absolute definitive version of Yandhi that somebody really knows about, because you know Kanye has all these different random kinds of track lists, but because of all the leaks, which we'll talk about either this show or the Patreon exclusive Yandhi conversation. One of those two will talk about these leaks. The leaks have been so prevalent that there people have been able to put together. Well, you might consider this is representative of what Yandhi could have been or similar to. Mm-hmm, there's a lot of stuff out there. So we're reviewing, it's definitely fan-made, right? But it is a collection of stuff that he has been working on since Ye, which came out, feels like a long time ago, but it was really just last June. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's going to be an interesting conversation because there's a little bit of overlap in some places, but it is different for sure than Jesus is King in a lot of ways. And so we'll have to figure out how we want to talk about the leaks and all that and how that plays in. We might just save all the leak conversation for the Patreon stuff. So we're talking about Yandhi because I think if you look at what Kanye did on Ye, and then you look at this album, if you didn't know about all this other stuff, it might feel like a pretty sharp turn. And I think that it might still feel like a sharp turn, but you know, we can maybe help fill in some of the blanks.
I think we'll do our best.
But before we go all Kanye all the time.
Yes.
Your man.
My man.
Snoop Doggy Dogg.
Needs to get a jobby job.
This was floating around Twitter today, says that TDE is a better version of Death Row. That's an interesting idea. You are the resident West Coast expert on the show.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear that, what comes to mind for you? What's your first reaction?
I'm not mad at the statement.
Okay.
I think that's the first thing that comes to mind. So you have to approach it from two different ways. You have to approach it musically, and then you have to approach it in terms of impact. So if we're looking at impact, well, okay, I'm starting to break this down now that I'm thinking. So we're talking about, let's talk music first.
Yeah.
So we had, from Death Row, we had The Chronic.
Yeah.
And we had Doggy Style.
Yeah.
Two of the greatest hip-hop albums, two of the greatest albums to ever release. And I think that's upper tier. You go with the second tier, you go like the Above the Rim soundtrack, you go Dog Food.
All Eyes on Me.
All Eyes on Me.
All Eyes on Me.
Yeah, you would probably put those in the upper tier in terms of impact, but in terms of quality, I think you and I would probably be one of the only ones that would say they were pretty good, but they weren't like, they can't sit next to Doggy Style and The Chronic, in my opinion.
Few albums can.
Correct. So it's not really a shot, but in terms of impact, both of those albums are very, very high. So there you go. Like, what? I guess what else? What other Death Row albums came out? The Murder Was the Case soundtrack, Daz Dillinger, Retaliation, Revenge, and Get Back.
That second Snoop album.
The Dogfather.
Was there a Death Row Christmas album?
There was a Death Row Christmas album.
Death Row's Greatest Hits, a double disc that I definitely owned in 1996.
I mean, you wanted to, because it probably had an unreleased Tupac song that wasn't good, but you wanted all the unreleased Tupac you could get.
The second disc, so the first disc was basically if you were late to those early, basically if you were too young, really, to go and buy like The Chronic when it came out, like that first disc was all the classics off like all their earlier stuff, right?
Yeah, but you need the
Chronic. Well, of course, and I got it later, right? Okay. But that second disc was, you got the good with the bad. You got remixes that had only been on like B-sides and stuff like that. And you know, there's no internet really then. So like, you know, that was like, whoa, what is this? A Let It Ride remix I've never heard. You know, it was that sort of thing. But then it was also a whole bunch of these new death row artists saying some derogatory stuff about, you know, Dr. Dre. And you're like, all right, what's going, you know, it was a mix of that. But anyway, so they had, as you pointed out, two definitive classics. I would say more than two, if we're being honest. Like, there's, the problem is Chronic and Doggy Style are so upper tier.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think All Eyes on Me is a definitive classic.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So musically, and then, so I look at TDE.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Kendrick's got.
Some people would say two classics. Some people would say three.
If we're using the tier structure,
mm-hmm.
I think he has one there. One in that upper tier, and I don't even know if it's as upper tier as Chronic or Doggy Style, but now we're splitting hairs. But we could say, is it safe? Well, actually, I might be going to a place people don't agree with. To me, Good Kid, Mad City is upper, upper, upper tier.
Agreed. Agreed. The only debut hip-hop album that's better is Doggy Style. And even then, you can make a case. I think you can make a case just in terms of like content and, you know, what it's, how it aged and what it did for Mute. Like, there's a lot. There's a real interesting discussion you could have there with both of those albums.
I'm going to put Illmatic in that category.
We had our
March
bracket. Madness. Yep. But we got to do another bracket in March.
Oh, ooh, okay.
Yeah, that should be a thing, I think.
Singles, what could we do? We could do
singles. We could do groups. We could do labels. We couldn't do labels. Labels would have to be like a Sweet 16.
Oh, you know what we could do? Because I started a document that listed out all these things. We could do like different eras of rap. So like 98J might get a one seed somewhere. Maybe, or two seed, you know, whatever. But
ooh,
like,
that's nerdy.
Like 93 Snoop,
mm-hmm.
right? 94 95, Nas versus 96 yep. Nas. Like, yeah, we can go deep.
95 Meth. You could do like 13 Drake versus 18 Drake. You could do 03 Kanye. You could do 2010 Kanye. Like, yeah, I'm rolling.
You might get a Cameron and like an 02, 03 Cameron. Maybe yeah. maybe you like 04 Cam.
I would say 04.
See, that's a nerdy bracket.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm with it.
All right. So TD, so we can't get off track.
Sorry.
This is gonna be the longest that ever. No, it's fine. So Kendrick has, I think most people can probably agree, at least two really, really, really good albums. Mm-hmm. I think he's got three.
Mm-hmm.
I like Damn. I like To Pimp a Butterfly, obviously. Good Kid, Mad City is an undisputed classic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What then? Right. I think, you know, Schoolboy's got some good stuff. He's got some good albums.
Yeah.
J-Rock's had some good stuff.
I think some people would put the SZA album high, and I think some people would put that Black Panther soundtrack high.
Boy, that is staggeringly overrated.
Well,
I don't see a world, like, I just can't imagine, like, if we're talking to music, like, I'm not even trying to look at it with like nostalgia, just like in terms of like the way that music impacts the culture and the world, honestly, that Death Row run was short but like notable. Really,
sure.
Really notable. Now, I'm sure that like the day-to-day life of being signed to TDE is way better than the day-to-day life of being signed to Death Row Records.
Yeah. I think the difference though is like the time. I think the 90s was so polarizing and there was so much, it was the way things were changing. Because you could really say, you can make a case for now things changing just as polarizing, and it's just hard to say because we're in it. But I think it's just changing in a different way, and music exists differently now. So I don't know if you can like make a case for the impact, because it's two different types of impact. And I think Death Row gets the advantage, not only because of like the music, but the artists and the type of artists and the type of artists that were impacting certain types of groups, Middle America, you know, the government, Congress, Supreme Court, like all this other stuff that hip hop normally didn't touch. This was the first time it was being touched. Versus now, I mean, you got rappers going to the White House.
Right.
You got rappers helping with campaigns. Like, it's pretty normal.
Right. This isn't the era of Tipper Gore and C. Dolores Tucker.
Correct. It's amazing that, what's your girl's name, who hated hip hop in the 90s. And now she's like, people love her. Oh, what is her name? She's a black woman. Cannot think of her name. I feel like she is in California.
Maxine Waters.
Maxine Waters. Yo, she was on that front line. She was on that anti-hip hop front line. Reverend Calvin Butts, who was infamously at the beginning of Bone Thugs, Thuggish, Ruggish Bone.
Oh, that's him.
There was a whole
him.
Group. Yeah. Yep. Yep. That was the guy that was running over the CDs with the... Yep. That was him.
This is an interesting conversation to have now because, like, I'm thinking... I was just about to say that I think America was more conservative then.
I would say so.
But then I'm thinking about what we're going to talk about today.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's true.
Okay.
I think it's different. I think the definition of what conservative means is shifted.
100%.
I think there is still a kernel of cultural conservatism in our country that does not line up with Republican and Democrat necessarily.
Not at all.
But, I mean, it was very... Yeah, I mean, hip hop was still on the outside looking in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
In 1997, it was still on the outside looking in, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
2015, 2019, it's not quite on the outside looking in.
100%. Correct.
But this was always bound to happen, right? Because once you had people young enough to grow up with hip hop, be in politics, be powerful people in this country, it was always going to change. Same thing happened right. to rock.
Yep.
Man.
Yep. We are in the middle of some stuff right now. For sure.
The world is wild right now, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about all the stuff that's happened this year alone.
It's hard to keep track of, like, on a week by week basis right now.
What is Skills Wrap Up going to sound like?
This might be the earliest someone... I don't even know if Skills is thinking about it yet. You think he goes the whole year with like a big notes file?
1,000%. Yes. Something happens and he comes up with a rhyme for it.
See, that, you know, that's good because otherwise, you imagine if you didn't do that and then you get to like Christmas and you're like, oh God.
So in January.
Right. You're just Googling frantically for 4 days in a row.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He wrote, Skills wrote his Jesus is King bar this week.
Mm.
Your man Kanye? Oh my God. Yep. That's coming.
Okay.
So would you say that statement was pandering by Snoop? Do you think it has some legitimacy to it?
I need more context.
Okay.
What does better mean? I realize I'm not trying to deflect the question, but like Snoop, who... probably has, will be charitable and say mixed feelings about his time at Death Row.
Well, he's come out recently and said that there's no hard feelings and he loves everybody.
There's no hard feelings. And he sounds like a man who has lived through a lot and is looking back at it. And you know, you look, things change, but like, it's not like everything was great then, you know, it was a traumatic time for him.
It's a fact.
Right. Big so facts. Like if he's looking at TDE now and he's like, oh, this is way better than what we had to go through, you know? But because right. he's not approaching it from a fan's perspective. He's right. thinking about it. If he's coming at it from an artist's perspective, yeah, sure. If he's thinking about, like, can TDE last longer than Death Row did? Probably. I mean, TDE already has, I think. Then, like, the yeah. Death Row that we think of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, in a weird way, like, Death Row was way better at the thing that I don't understand why TDE isn't better at.
Which is?
Integrating the crew within various, with all the different projects they do.
Yeah, very true.
Like Death Row, you know, they set up the Dog Pound because they were on the previous stuff. You know, like mm-hmm. bigger name artist has a new album coming out. You got a new signee, give them a plum spot. Like they do that sometimes, but it always feels like the one token spot.
Yeah.
Doesn't really feel yeah. like how, like, I don't know, like Kendrick will certainly pop up on say like the Sir album. But like, shouldn't Sir be just singing background on all the Kendrick stuff that he needs? Shouldn't he be like fully integrated so it feel, you know, and it feels like a full extension?
He should be their Danny Boy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Danny Boy never got the look, did he?
No, he didn't. and he could have got one after I Ain't Mad At You. Like, it was right there. Yeah, they typically, I mean, like, did they miss the boat on a Black Hippie album?
Yeah, I think there was a period of time where Kendrick was definitely, like, he had taken the lead in terms of, like, who is the most prominent member of TDE.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Schoolboy had put out some stuff, and this is maybe, like, peak Absol, like, maybe I'm thinking, like, 2014 era,
mm-hmm.
2015. Like, that would have been the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But Kendrick's way more famous than the rest of them now.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about this?
No, I'm ready to get Kanye so we can move on.
Your girl Lizzo. I guess it's my girl Lizzo.
It's your girl.
So she has a very well-known song this year. Truth Hurts was the number one song in the country for like 7 weeks.
March Madness for white women.
And there's a very notable line in it where she talks about how she did a DNA test and found out she's 100% that, we'll say, chick. But everybody knows the line.
Mm-hmm.
And like...
That's how I know we're old. Because in the 90s, that would have 100% been the radio edit. That chick.
That
like,
chick.
There's no... Like, now they're just editing the word out.
Right. Radio edits are so lazy.
Super. Go in there and record another version.
Like Snoop.
Like Snoop. Master P was real good for that, too. Tupac was good for that, too.
I mean, two of America's Most Wanted, like, they had to reconstruct. They had to reconstruct so much of that.
Yeah.
It's amazing the songs that they decided to put out as radio singles.
And worked.
Like, they put out How Do You Want It?
Dude, my girl and I listened to Toss It Up the other day.
Oh,
good
no.
Lord. I'm just listening to the verse and I'm just looking at my girl the whole time like, yo, this was 1996.
Yeah.
Then it just turns into an R&B song like after the verse.
Well, you know.
Yeah. Casey and JoJo, Danny Boy. Who's the other guy? Aaron Hall?
I mean, R. Kelly was in that category too.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about who was on Toss It Up.
Oh, I think it was just Casey and JoJo, right?
Danny Boy was on there, but I feel like it was Aaron Hall too.
All right, hold up. I love that this is what we're spending our time on right now. Hold on. Casey, JoJo. Danny Boy is definitely in the video. Oh, Aaron Hall's in the video. You're right. Look at that. Oh, yeah. Aaron Hall, Danny Boy, Casey, and JoJo. Wow.
Woof.
How does this song sample No Diggity?
Oh, it's clear. It's the dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
But, like, they came out at the same time. Pretty close.
No, I thought that there was supposed to be something between Teddy Riley and Death Row I read somewhere. Where like Teddy Riley did some remixes or something. There was some sort of working relationship there. Like somebody did a verse. Like I think Dre doing No Diggity or something like that.
I got it
Teddy
right
Teddy Riley
here.
Did something.
I got it right here.
Okay. Okay, give it to me.
No Diggity is credited to Teddy Riley.
Okay.
It's not. Dre produced it. But he couldn't be credited because he was in the process of getting out of Death Row. The beat to No Diggity was initially offered to Tupac by Suge Knight. But with Dre leaving the label, they sold the beat to Teddy Riley.
There it is.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait, is this true? Hold on. Upon the release of the finished recording by Blackstreet, Tupac and Death Row responded with a diss track over an instrumental sampling No Diggity, but they were forced to replace the production after Blackstreet issued the label a cease and desist. Toss It Up is an updated version of that.
You see that.
Wow. Twitter in 96 would have been bananas.
Yeah. Because because Pac disses Dre at the end of Toss It Up, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's so weird. So it's a song about having sex with a woman, and then you turn it into bashing Dr. Dre.
I mean, that is Tupac in 1996.
Man. Man.
Okay. So... Anyway, Lizzo.
Yeah, Lizzo. I'm sorry.
So,
yes,
100%
Lizzo.
That chick, right? Yep. So, this tweet went viral at the time, right? Yep. When this tweet. So, I'm sorry. So, there's a line in this. I'm getting this all out of context. All right. So, anyway, let me start over. So, there's a line in the song. It was from a tweet that went viral, but the person who wrote the tweet, who's also a songwriter, was not credited as a songwriter for the song.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, in 2017, when this when Truth Hurts came out, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it seemed like she was upset, but you know, what are you going to do? But now it's the number one spot. It's number one song in the country for 7 weeks. So like, you know, obviously you're going to feel some kind of way about it. And so this article on The Fader goes into detail about like how, like the process that she went through, the person who wrote the tweet of trying to get credit and recognition for coming up with this line,
mm-hmm.
which involves an intellectual, like how do you claim intellectual property on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
All this sort of stuff. And so like, to say the end of the story and then I'll give commentary. So in the end, Lizzo is given credit. They're still figuring out what it's going to look like, is what the article says, which is, to me, is code for we're trying to figure out what the split's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so here's the problem, right? Number one, it's one line, but mm-hmm. it's a very notable line that they're selling merch with.
Mm-hmm.
So like this person kind of has them a little over the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So good for them for getting mm-hmm. money. But like, this is an interesting thing, right? Because it's one of those things where like, when you consume so much media and like stuff online, and as a songwriter, this is actually an open question to you as well. Like, as you're going through this process, do you ever stop and think, where did I get that idea from? Or I heard this somewhere, it sounded pretty cool, let me put it in a song. Oh no, I shouldn't, because I don't know how to credit. Like, do you ever worry about that sort of stuff?
No, okay. Not really. But I kind of make it a point to not, like, you know, I mean, I'm not going to sit up here and say I'm not inspired by anybody, but I think my goal, I kind of come from that old school where it's like, okay, let me take this, but then let me make it so authentically mine that like, it's mine. I don't want to, I just don't want to take something verbatim.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's, to me, I think that like, it's one of those things where, do I think that Lizzo like purposefully, like from the get go was like, I'm not going to give this person credit? Probably not. Do I think that she should have handled this situation a lot better? Yeah, absolutely. Right. Because like this article goes through and describes how like Lizzo kind of denied it at first. Like there was all this sort of back and forth.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I'm not surprised. I mean, Lizzo is a big name right now, a lot of money coming in. So anybody who's ever been connected to Lizzo or thinks that their work might be appropriated in some way, like they're going to go in right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because that's what happens with any major artist once they pop, right?
Yeah.
People who helped them out, sat in the studio, like they're all going to come for their money.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, I mean, obviously, like, you know, the split should be whatever you can get negotiated, right? That's the way negotiations work. But like, that's tough. Like, I guess a good, you know what? It's actually not on, it's that there's a lot of parallels in hip hop, right? So like, think about, you made it a hot line, I made it a hot song, right? So like, mm-hmm. rappers sampled like lines for years.
Right, that's the first thing I thought of. Right, what's the difference between this and Jay-Z, I'm not a biter, I'm a writer for myself and others. I say a big verse, I'm only bigging up my brother. What's the difference?
Or, I mean, you know, it's a good thing Primo didn't become a pop star, right? Because otherwise he'd be like, you know, like Grandpa Simpson, walk in the door, turn around, and walk right back out with this conversation, because he is taking more lines than anybody. So sometimes credited, a lot of times not.
Well, what about that Christina Aguilera album? Did that have any scratched hooks?
I forgot about that album.
She did it.
I just remember that one single with the big horns.
I don't remember anything about that album.
Hold up. I love that, like, I type in Christina Aguilera and DJ Premier, and it's, like, an actual thing. Oh, Ain't No Other Man. That's the one.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yep. Oh, you're right.
I'm looking at the credits for this right now. Oh, no. I mean, there are, like, everything is definitely, like, there's the brass sample is credited, and there's a vocal sample that's credited as well. So, you know, Christina's people were like, no, we don't. They were like,
oh, absolutely.
No. They were like, no, it's okay. We'll pay for it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no. Yeah. They had the budget. Like, right. This ain't D&D.
Anything else you want to say about Lizzo? When you read this article, was there something that stuck out to you as like, man, she kind of did dirty, or was this kind of like, what was the interesting part for you that really stuck out?
I guess it was like, well, you know, is the tide changing in terms of, you know, how people are getting their credits and how people are able to, you know, what grounds people have as far as suing and collecting money. Like there's a lot of gray area that we have to work through. And that's what happens with change, right? It's sort of indicative of the culture we're in right now. I thought that was really interesting because like the biting part, the hip hop part, like how do you justify that when, you know, hip hop is God, how many things do we steal? How many, you know, how does that happen? I don't know.
Okay. Speaking of hip hop, real hip hop.
Real hip hop.
You went to a concert recently.
Speaking of real hip hop. Man, yeah, so I don't ever want to be the rapper. Like if I am rapping into my 40s, I don't want to be the guy who says, yo, make some noise for real hip hop. Who in the building for real hip hop?
Was there a lot of that at the Sky Zoo and Elzai concert?
That's all there was.
Mm.
That's all there was. So they were at Scully's. It's my second time seeing Sky. Actually, I think they both were at 2x2. So they were at a festival that a yearly hip hop festival that gets put on in the summer, but they came back because Sky has his album with Pete Rock. And I'll say this, Doc, this is the most efficient rap show I've ever been to.
Oh, you know I love efficiency. Tell me more.
Oh boy. Okay. So now let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. When you went to go see Tyler,
yeah.
How much time was there between Goldlink and Jaden and Jaden and Tyler?
A little bit of time between Goldlink and Jaden, maybe like 15 minutes.
Okay.
And then maybe a little bit longer between Jaden and Tyler. Some of that was because they had to do some stuff with the stage. Because Jaden had what appeared to be very expensive music videos playing behind him during his set.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler had a whole other sort of thing going on. Maybe like 20, 25.
Oh, well, good for you.
Oh, was it longer for you?
Oh, it was like an hour for Tyler.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, it was about an hour for Tyler, and it was about 20 to 30 minutes for Jaden.
Oh,
for
sure. Wow.
Yep, so I had a class, so I got there late, which I would have got there around the time I would have got there anyway. So I think doors open at 8:30. I got there maybe 9:45.
Yeah.
And the last opening act was performing. They're actually taking opening acts with them versus just soliciting whoever's local in the area. I thought that was interesting. The last guy I wasn't crazy about, but he did bring somebody from Dayton. Was his name like Eman Jones, something like that. He was super nice. He was like really, really dope. He just came out, rapped a verse and got off stage. He was dope. And then soon as they get, give it up for my man so-and-so. People cheer for him and they're like, all right, now, you guys ready for Elzai? Really?
Armand's like, I need a bathroom break.
Yeah, I need to stretch and, yeah. I want to go look at the merch table. Like, nah, it was, they went straight to. Elzai did maybe 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
Yeah, 20, 25 minutes. Maybe 30.
How much were
maybe
the tickets?
Maybe 30. 20. I paid 15.
All right.
Yeah, it wasn't it.
Let's keep our expectations according. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So probably 30 minutes and maybe Sky Zoo did 45. But that was the biggest takeaway was there were no breaks between acts. That was really, really interesting. Elzai was cool. Elzai was Elzai. Like he did Love It Here, which was beautiful. And he did Hide in Place. And, you know, it's weird to see him do like Selfish and Tainted. And it's like a room full of dudes like. Know your audience, maybe, but I mean, sure.
You got to do the records.
Yeah, you still got to do them. Sky Zoo came out and Sky only did Pete Rock records. Of course, trying to promote that album, I get it. And yeah, it was cool. It's a cool show. It's a cool show. It was, you know, $15. I was home by midnight. I got out by 11:30, 11:15, something like that. Hung around for a second. Knew some people there, talked to them, and then got out. Efficient rap shows. I'm noticing, and I'm wondering if that's just a thing with older indie rap acts because they're aware that their audience is older and, like, I ain't trying to be out all night. Because I said that a lot of times to my girl. My girl's like, are you going to go? And I was like, well, yeah, but I don't want to be out all night. And I wasn't out all night. So, shout out to hip hop for growing up, maturing, and efficiency.
Efficiency.
Efficiency. This is what it is.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.